Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm your host, Vince Bonfigli. Racing action was kind of light this weekend, the Truck Series and the Camping World and the Xfinity Series were out at the Iowa Speedway. NHRA Mellow Yellow Series was down in Bristol for the Thunder Valley Nationals. Joining us today will be Pro Stock champ Erica Ender Stevens. She was going to join us last week. Something came up, but we expect to have her on shortly. So hopefully we can stick around. And the weather's getting kind of nasty out here. It is the first full day, second day of summer. Of course, yesterday being the first day of summer. And we're just getting into the hot and muggies here. So one thing about doing stuff on the internet, you need electrical power. Well, you need anything really when you're broadcasting power. Some rough news over the weekend. Mike Wallace, him, his wife, and his daughter were leaving a Rascal Flatts concert when he was assaulted, knocked to the ground, out cold, and then was repeatedly being kicked by three thugs. They were arrested, and in the jail, and of course, I guess they were booked, have a scheduled court date, and were charged with misdemeanor for assault. So it's not good. They were out of jail before Mike was out of the hospital. If anybody saw Kenny Wallace's post, he was kind of upset, and rightly so. You go out there with your family for a night out to catch a show. And Mike being one of the nicest guys I've ever met, I had the pleasure of interviewing him and catching up with him at Dover a few years back. Of course, Kenny, I would always catch because he was always there, but it was whether he's in the car or in the booth. Kenny Wallace always had something to do, so Michael would always make some either Truck Series runs or some Xfinity runs, was Nationwide and Busch Series at the time. So but that being said, do you think that somebody in the public eye like that could be approached and attacked? Apparently it might have been a setup for some reason, looking for a target by these individuals, because he was talking to one and apparently, or two of them, and then somebody came rushing from the side, and that's when the mayhem broke loose. So you just can't be too careful these days with all the stuff going on. You don't want to, that's going to put up a little bit of a wall around you anymore. And then with the Truck Series in action out of Iowa, of course, Iowa Speedway was the track that's owned by Rusty Wallace, no less. And it's a nice venue out there. I have yet to get out there. It opened up a few years ago, and they had a couple of events out there, the Xfinity Series and the Camping World Truck Series. Being the mainstays of there, the Sprint Cup Series. Don't go to Iowa, so it's one of those tracks that was built with the anticipation of getting, I guess, a cup race, or not, but they don't really do that. So anyway, if we look at as we await our guest. Hopefully she doesn't have any trouble calling in. Sometimes that happens, and I'm at the mercy of the studio, which is based in New York. So that's where all the servers are for this. That's one thing about traveling, broadcasting over the web. So we had one time where Gary Camp had a little trouble getting in, and I tried to do it another route, and it didn't really work out too well. But that's neither here nor there. So we'll anticipate that. Out at Thunder Valley, and I found out something interesting, that when they built situated in the valley there, that when the nitro cars fired up and went down the track, it was so loud it broke the glass in the towers. All the windows, which is pretty amazing. It's, you know, that kind of power, and no place for the shockwaves to go would have an effect on the windows like that. Anyway, we might as well take a look at the NHRA in the top fuel division. Sean Langdon and Tony Schumacher battled it out in the finals. Of course, Sean, who's been on the show a couple of times before, former NHRA top fuel champ, along with Tony Schumacher. So Langdon having a rough time after driving with Alan Abbey. And having that team sponsorship pull out. So, anyway, get to our guest, good friend of the show, I guess, one and only NHRA Pro Stock champ, two straight years, Erica Ender-Stevens. Erica, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I think you got out of Bristol just in time. The weather's getting kind of nasty here. It's supposed to get more, possibly some severe stuff come through this area. So, other than that, you're having a tough year. This has probably got to be one of the toughest years that I think you've had since competing in the pro stock division.
Yeah, it's been a little challenging with the rule changes, and on top of switching to EFI and all of that, we took on a new manufacturer as well. So we built two new brand new race cars and an engine development program. So we're just a little bit behind the eight ball right now, and it sucks.
I know. I was wondering why. I mean, I can understand, you know, you don't have a choice to go with the EFI, but to change the manufacturers, I don't know if that was a company thing or, but I mean, even Drew's still running the Chevys though, and he's not really that
Drew
much better.
Not
I mean,
teammate anymore. I've got Jed Coughlin and I in Mopars, and then Vincent Nobile is in our Chevy. So we're a three car team now.
Oh, okay. When did that change?
It's okay. There's the drama of pro stock. It's forever changing.
Oh, man. It's like I'm watching everything and here he's still running last race. You know, I saw the race with the team colors and all of a sudden now it's I know Jed was with you. You told me that coming into the season. And now Vincent Nobile is with you now. So
Ruby Tuesday right there.
Yep. Vincent Nobile was with us from the beginning of the year as well. He came on board with us last year in the middle of the year. So it's been a pretty good deal to have him over there. And, you know, we're working on getting our Mopars figured out. We made some strides in the right direction last week in Bristol. And, you know, Jiggy ended up going to the semifinals. So hopefully we're heading in the right direction, because it hasn't been exactly fun or entertaining to not be as competitive as we're used to.
I know, and it's kind of, you know, I'm tuning in the races to watch, and then the next thing I know, it's like, man, but your times are consistent, and that's, at least you know it's something that's fixable.
Right. Yep, we work on it every day.
I could imagine, because the frustration that, you know, knowing that you're this close and trying to just even get into the second round. I mean, I think you've made it into the second round only a couple of times, and that's got to be even the hard part there.
Definitely, especially coming off the last 2 years that we had. So we'll just continue to work at it and get better, and, you know, it doesn't really matter until the countdown starts. So hopefully we have our act together by then.
That's the main thing. And what I did catch on one of the broadcasts, I think it was a couple of races events ago, was, you know, they had your crew chief, and they were talking about creating the downforce by tuning the suspensions of the car, where that's the only, pro stock is the only division where they have to do that. And how tough is it for them to make the adjustments to where you can get the right downforce? Because it seemed like that could change from round to round.
Yeah, it definitely does. And then track condition plays a big role in that as well. But, you know, without the hood scoops, it's created a different aerodynamic-wise for the downforce. So it's actually, the darts are a lot looser. So, you know, at some tracks, we've actually been running a taller wicker bill and changing four-link setups and stuff and shocks to try to get the car more stable. So it's definitely a challenge, but thankfully I've got two really good crew chiefs that handle all of that.
That's for sure, and they're always being kept busy, I guess, to keep things going. What was the main reason of switching to Dodge? And I'm surprised they don't use a Challenger body instead of a Dart body. I think it's a cooler look. I don't know, maybe it could work a little different. But
right. No, I think some changes are around the corner as far as that's concerned. But they've been running the Dart for a number of years now. And, you know, Rick Jones built two really awesome cars for me and Jake. And we've just got to continue to work on it. I mean, the whole reason behind the switch was a sponsorship deal. So we actually did not pursue that at all. Dodge came to us, and, you know, we're really fortunate to be partners with them. It's a great sponsorship deal for us. And, you know, once we get these cars running great, it'll be good for everybody involved.
That's for sure. As somebody who's owned a few Dodges over the years, myself, and, you know, I'm a Dodge, Ford Dodge person, so with Dodge coming on board, at least that's a good thing. They can give you all the manufacturer support, I guess, that hopefully that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been extremely helpful with all of that. We have a entire engineer team behind us, and we've taken our car up there to the wind tunnel and whatnot. They're always trying to help us out. We've got a couple of guys from SRT that come to the races with us almost every weekend. And then some really brilliant engineer guys that are working full-time back in Detroit on our program. So we're really lucky to have a group of people that's really dedicated to not just our team, but our sport in general. And they want to put our Dodges in the winner's circle as much as we do. So it's just a matter of time before that happens.
I know, it's just that the frustration of the struggle to get there with major changes, I guess, is just the tough part. And the thing is, having that Hemi power plant under the hood, I mean, it's an iconic brand over the course of the 60s and even the 50s, I guess, when the original Hemi came out. So it seems like
Right.
Hemi and drag racing belong together, and they have been over the years.
Wait, what did you say? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said I think that, you know, Hemi and NHRA have been together for such a long time. It just makes a lot of sense to have a Hemi power your vehicle, and just, you know, it's just, what's it like to have that big monster under the hood?
Right. Yeah. It's again, it's definitely a really great partnership. So I'm excited to see what the future holds for us. And you know, my guys at Elite Performance will continue to work on the Hemi horsepower, and we'll just get better. It's you know, talked about it before, but it has been frustrating. And my guys work so incredibly hard and take a lot of pride in how we run. So we'll get there.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of yours, and then. Always glad to have you on the show. So I know you're busy. Again, my condolences if for last week. And glad to have you this week. And we'll
thank
you.
I'm sorry. Sorry I missed you last week. It was obviously a last minute deal, but I was up in Maryland at a good friend's funeral. So we're glad to be on your show this week.
Well, it's always a pleasure having you on, and you're always gracious enough to come on, and I appreciate that. So that being said, I'll let you tend to things, and let's hope we can see you in the finals the next event.
That would be awesome, especially with our progress last week. And, you know, Norwalk's been good to us in the past, so it's, you know, one of my favorite facilities to go to. Bristol's my absolute favorite, but Norwalk's in the top five for sure, and they always have a great racing surface, and the Bader family does a great job of running the track. So we're excited to go back, and hopefully, like you said, this will be our weekend.
That's for sure. And, and next year I got to get down to Bristol to come meet you in person for the first time. So I'm not that far away, and I'll buy a ticket for the weekend and take some time out and enjoy some of the events.
That sounds awesome.
I heard that when they built the track, that when the cars went down, they broke the windows out in the tower. So,
oh yeah,
it must be an awesome feeling in Thunder Valley. There, I've been to Englishtown, but Thunder Valley must be a special thing. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Thunder Valley's awesome. So you just let Lee and I know if you're headed out there, and we'll get you some credentials and give you the backstage tour.
Sounds like a plan. All right, Erica, you have
good
luck coming up, and you know we're pulling for you. Thanks again for coming on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye now. There you have Eric Ender Stevens. Trying to get that Hemi Dart put back in line. Again, not a good weekend for her on the track, but they're getting some bugs worked out. That's awesome, because we can hope to see her into the countdown and back into the championship round, because you win two straight championships and then the major change going from a Chevy to a Dodge, the vehicle that you won. And, but Mopar steps to the plate. You know, I have two Dodges sitting in my front yard, and there's a lot of Dodges in this neck of the woods, so I'm sure they would be glad to have a pro stock champion under their wings. Now, back to our NHRA wrap up. Tony Schumacher, Sean Langdon. Like I said, Sean's been on the show a few times. Won a championship with Allen Abbey Racing, and then when the sponsorship pulled out, left Allen Johnson Racing without primary dollars, they were able to keep Sean in the car till the countdown, and then Don Schumacher Racing was able to put up a car for Sean and He's been with Don Schumacher ever since. It's like when things get thrown together like that. But it just doesn't happen, you know. There's a lot of changes that come about, and you got to get used to different things. So, that's just the way it is. Of course, Schumacher, the Sarge, number eight qualifier, or Steve Torrence, number one, but Tony Schumacher, number eight, starting mid-pack against number nine's J.R. Todd, was able to beat him in round one with 379. Todd's 387 with a three. You know, you're looking at almost a full tenth of a second difference there. Reaction time's pretty close, in 057 for Schumacher, 047 for Todd, which put him up against, put the Sarge up against the number one qualifier in round two. And a better reaction time with an 056 for the Sarge and Torrence with his 080, which, you know, 3/100ths isn't much of a difference in the T was a 383 with a 5 for Torrence, and Schumacher had a 380 with a 2. Was able to, in a close one, set up against the defending champ Antron Brown, who got through Scott Palmer and Richie Crampton. Now, I think Schumacher, with his consistent runs in the 3.8s, had a 3.84. Antron Brown, with an 8.39 with a 9, having tire problems there, wasn't able to get the grip he needed to make it to the final, so that set the stage for the final versus Langdon Schumacher. Langdon, on the other hand, went through Terry McMillan in round one with a 3.81. He was a number six qualifier. Langdon was the number six qualifier. Then up against Brittany Force, where he won by 0.2 of a second over Brittany, who was the number three qualifier. Of course, then up against Doug Kalita in the semifinals. It was a pedal fest with Langdon's 4.46 for the four was better than Doug Kalita's 5.35 and set the stage for a close one. Schumacher, of course, running 3.8 all the way through to the finals with a slight lead disadvantage there when Langdon had a good run and went to a 3.83 with an 8 with an 0.36 reaction time. Tony Schumacher's 3.92 with a 4. So Schumacher losing a tenth of a second there on after running 3.8 throughout the day. Pretty low 3.8 in them, as a matter of fact. Of course, in round one against J.R. Todd, he was a 3.79, so he was below the 3.8. And then I guess on the average, it's about the same ET all the way through. But if he wanted to, the 3.9 would have been better off in round one instead of the final. So it gives Langdon his first W of the season and in a couple of years. And set the stage. And then, of course, after the top fuelers, you get the funny cars, which is the other Nitro division. And Tommy Johnson Jr. and Matt Hagen in the finale on Father's Day. Hagen, a native of Christiansburg, Virginia, which is about 65 to 68 miles north of here. I figure about a good 100 miles north of the track. So this is basically Hagen's home track. And, of course, he didn't disappoint, qualifying fourth overall. Of course, Ronnie Capps, the number one qualifier, but Hagen, number four. Tommy Johnson Jr., the number six qualifier, had a road to the finals that will start with him. being the number six, we'll start with the lower qualifier first. Tommy Johnson Jr. up against Cruz Pedregon. The cruiser broke, wasn't able to finish, has no ET. So he did get out of the light, though, with an 0-60 reaction time, but it's not a good thing when you're all set to go and you got the better reaction time in the round and the motor lets go. Of course, that set the stage. Johnson with a 398 with an 8 moves on to face Robert Height. 4.095. Johnson with a 3.99 with a 0, staying consistent from round one, a couple of hundredths of a second slower, but it's all in track conditions and adjustments on the clutches, because you got to get the main thing is getting the grip and not breaking traction. Johnson then in the semifinals against another former guest of the show, Alexis DeGioia, in the Patron funny car. Johnson with a 4.03 with a 9, a 0.52 reaction off the light. DeGioia 0.62 off the light and a 4.13 with an 8. So we're basically, she was a full tenth of a second behind the Johnson. Let's set the stage. Hagen, on the other hand, like I said, number four qualifier. Up against Tim Wilkerson in round one. Wilkerson not having a good round with a 4.61 with a 4. Hagen at 3.94 with a 5. Big difference there. Of course, smoking the tires will cost you about that much time. Wilkerson, the number 13 qualifier. Hagen then, round two, against Courtney Force. Courtney the 4.048 with a, and Hagen with an exact ET of 4.048. What got this one? The reaction time. Hagen with an 0.51. Courtney with an 0.74. He got out quicker. He got down to the finish line ahead, even though the clock was identical. I mean, that one thing everybody that follows drag racing knows is getting to the finish line first. That's why if you have a quicker reaction time and somebody doesn't and you get there ahead of them, it's called a hole shot. So, but this technically wasn't a hole shot win for Hagen because their ET was the same. If he would have had a slower ET, then it would have been the hole shot. So, but he would have crossed the finish line first. But that was a dead heat, pretty much. I think the photo finish was spectacular on that. Then up against Ronnie Capps, the number one qualifier. Matt Hagen's trail led through the top five qualifiers in the event. Then up against Ronnie Capps, both of them having a little issues there. Hagen with a 5.19 and Ronnie Capps with a 5.98 with a 9. Then they got it all together, was able to regain the traction up against Tommy Johnson Jr. Johnson with an 0.35 off the tree. Hagen with an 0.57 off the tree. Johnson with the 4.03 with an 8. Hagen with a 4.03 with a 0. Johnson with the hole shot. Takes it because he had a slower ET. I mean, two rounds for Hagen were pretty much identical between round two and the finals, where he and the person he was against had the same time. But when you were looking at the Johnson with the 0.08 of a second slower, but you have 0.2 0.01 of a second quicker off the light, that made the difference. Off to the pro stock division in the cars. Like I said, our guest, Erica Enders, number 10 qualifier against her teammate in round one. Vincent Nobile, I'm not used to seeing. I know Drew Skillman was with the team. Come to find out, he's not with the team now. They always find something new with Erica every time I talk to her. And getting Dodge come on with them, plus the electronic fuel injection. The EFI thing, everybody has to, in pro stock, has to go through that. So, they still have some bugs to work out, but I'm sure she'll get there. Vincent Nobile, the number one qualifier. I mean, the number five qualifier. Number one qualifier was Jason Lyne, who went to the finals against his teammate, Greg Anderson, and it seems like those two have been in the finals since the beginning of the season. Matter of fact, I could probably go down the stats for the year and find that. So, but it seems like every week it's either Jason Lyne and Greg Anderson in the finals. This time, Jason Lyne took the Wally over his teammate and here's how it went. Lyne, number one qualifier, Greg Anderson, two qualifier. Well, there you have the two best teams in the division right now. Of course, they're the same team. They were with Dodge last year. Now, they're with Chevy this year. Lyne, round one over Dave River, who broke. Round two was a bye round for Lyne, so he had an easy pass into the semifinals, and then there he went up against Drew Skillman, who used to be with Elite Motorsports and now isn't. Skillman 668 with an 8. Skillman had a 1472, which that just means something broke and he coasted across the finish line. Took him a while to get down the quarter mile. And then the battle of the event, of course, number two qualifier Greg Anderson, first through Chris McGahey, then Shane Gray in round two. Close round for, I mean, round one, Anderson went against Gaydosh, John Gaydosh. It was a 665 to Gaydosh's 679. Slow reaction time for Anderson didn't make a difference, as the car he had was just that much quicker. Shane Gray, 716. Anderson, a 666 with an 8. And then up against Jeg Coughlin, Erica's other teammate, who she said made it to. Here was a quick reaction time, an 027 for Anderson and an 020 for Coughlin. But, again, issues with something under the hood. Coughlin with a 1088 and Anderson with a 669, setting the stage for the finale. Lyne takes it with a 666 with an 8. Anderson with a 669 with a 4, 3/100ths of a second, plus a little quicker reaction time for Lyne, gives him the Wally. You got to watch Lyne with the reaction time. He's usually lower than that. He's been known to pull off whole shot wins the past few years. So, with that being said, in the point standings, Top Fuel. Doug Kalita holds the number one spot over Antron Brown still. Steve Torrence third. Brittany Force, who was at the top of the pack, in fourth spot, 172 back. Tony Schumacher in fifth. Langdon with the win, sixth place. J.R. Todd, seventh. Clay Milliken, eighth. Ninth, Richie Crampton, and tenth is Leah Pritchett. Leah had got a win this year too. It's been a year for the women, winning in Nitro and the motorcycle. We're just waiting for Erica to be the only. It's the only Pro Stock is the only division where no woman has won this year. Angel Sampei got it in the last event out in Epping. So we're waiting for Erica to do it. She'll do it. Hopefully before the countdown. And right now she's battling to get in that countdown after having a year like this. So as long as she's in the top 10 by Indianapolis, then she's got a shot at repeating as a championship. Funny Car, Ron Capps leads the division. Fast Jack Beckman in the two spot. Courtney Force in the three. She's 100 points out. Beckman's 55 back. There's your close competition there. Matt Hagan is fourth. Del Worsham in the fifth spot. Jim Wilkerson, sixth. Robert Tommy Johnson with the win is in the seventh. He's 166 back. Robert Height, eighth. Ninth, John Force. And on the bubble, Alexis DeJoria. But she's got a 117-point lead over Chad Head in 11th. So it would take a lot for her to get bumped. Pro Stock, Jason Lyne, number one, 93 back. Teammate Greg Anderson. Lyne getting a few more Wallys than Anderson. Their other teammate, Bo Butner, third. Alan Johnson is fourth. Drew Skillman is fifth. Vincent Nobile, sixth. Seventh, Chris McGahey. Eighth, Jeg Coughlin. Ninth, Shane Gray. Tenth, Alex Laughlin. Erica in the 11th spot. 13 points out. So she's got to go a few rounds. Alex Laughlin can be caught. So could Shane Gray. So she can get as high as ninth. So we just have to hope she does it, of course. It's always good to have her. So we'll have to get down to Thunder Valley. I'm going to make it there next year. And we'll take pictures and put that kind of stuff up on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So, on to Iowa, the Iowa Speedway, or the Truck Series in action. William Byron took the checkered flag on Saturday. Cole Custer, Cameron Haley third, Ben Rhodes fourth, Tyler Reddick fifth, Daniel Suarez sixth, seventh, Ben Kennedy eighth, Matt Crafton ninth, Christopher Bell, and rounding out the top 10 was Timothy Peters. And we have four rookies in the top 10, including the first and second place finishers. So it's good to see the guys in there and not having to battle Sprint Cup drivers, because usually they take the win there. So, but this time it was all Truck Series regulars and couple of Xfinity drivers. In the 32 truck field out there in Newton, Iowa. We're looking at a 7/8 mile tri-oval, 200 lap race. Average speed, 92.7 miles an hour. Margin of victory that close, 0.43 seconds. There were five cautions for 39 laps and four lead changes amongst four drivers. William Byron leading most, led twice for 107 laps, collected the most bonus points. He swept the bonus point, and leading laps were Cole Custer, led for three laps, Tyler Reddick led for 37, and your second most lap leader was John Hunter Nemechek, leading 53 laps. So you do the math, it comes out to 200 laps. Anyway, in the points, Matt Crafton still leads that division with William Byron only 11 points behind him. So that could change within a few races. Now you figure the points now, you get points according to your finishing positions. So you have 32, the max points you can get is 37 if you lead a lap, lead the most laps. And I think two for the win. And then, you know, and then you count 1 point grades back till you get to the 32nd spot. So the guy that comes in last gets 0 points. And then 31st place gets 2 points, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, and all that, all the way up to the win, plus the bonus points. So you figure 5 bonus point total, and that's how that goes. So there is a chance there that William Byron and can catch Matt Craft. Of course, Thor Sport, having a fire at their shops, which doesn't help. At least able to maintain the fact that they can still put up a good running team. They're always one of the top teams in the Camping World Truck Series. Timothy Peters in the third spot. Daniel Hemric in the fourth spot. Fifth, Tyler Reddick. John Hunter Nemechek, sixth, Johnny Sauter, seventh, Ben Kennedy, eighth, Spencer Gallagher, ninth, Cameron Haley in the 10th spot. Of course, when and you're in with the chase, so your chase winners are Matt Crafton, William Byron, I mean your winners this year, John Hunter Nemechek and Johnny Sauter. So in the truck series, I'm curious to see the truck series chase. I mean, this is one of the most competitive divisions in NASCAR. So it's just going to be interesting to see how it shakes out for their chase run. We have a race winner, William Byron, with his crew chief. So here's William Byron after the race in the post-race press conference talking about his win.
Continuing our post-race media availabilities, the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series 8th Annual Speediatrics 200. We're joined now by the race-winning team, William Byron and Rudy Fugel. William, this is your third victory. Your second in a row in this season so far. Your first victory in your first NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race here at Iowa Speedway. Talk to us about those closing laps.
Yeah, the truck was great all night. You know, my whole Liberty University team did a great job. Rudy made great calls. I felt like the first run we were a little bit free, and We were stuck in traffic was the main thing. And once we got that good restart and cleared the eight, we were able to kind of set sail for the next couple restarts. But then, obviously, there was a curveball there with some guys taking two tires, and I made a mistake leaving the box and stalled it. So just a couple rookie things there, but I was able to make a few spots up on the next restart. And then when it came down to those last couple restarts, I just knew that we could try the outside, and I just kept moving up and up and up until, you know, I kept getting blocked, and finally just made it three wide. So it just worked out, and really proud of this whole team. Like I said, it's amazing what we've been able to do. Rudy?
Back to, and there's your winner. We have Cole Custer, see what he had to say. If they're coming up a little short.
By the wears and everything in practice, though, we could probably do it. It was definitely stretching it with how many laps got on the tires, but it worked out, and I got to thank Marcus for doing it and getting the track position, because that was huge, having more clean air.
We're also joined by our third place.
On to the Xfinity Series. Strange finish for the race. In the 250-lap event for the American Ethanol E15 250, Sam Hornish Jr., where has he been for driving the number 18 Joe Gibbs Toyota? Led four times for 183 laps. Of course, we've had Sam on the show a few years back when he was in 2013, when he was doing battle for the Xfinity Series Championship and wound up losing it on the last race of the year at Homestead to Austin Dillon, who then went on to the Sprint Cup Series the following year, qualifying on the pole for the Daytona 500. And we all know the rest of that story, but Sam Hornish Jr. at that time, after that Penske Racing, and went to Joe Gibbs Racing, where really you didn't see him too much, too often. He filled in. He was a fill-in driver for events that the Cup guys didn't want to do out at that they normally would do at events like, you know, that were Xfinity races with the Sprint Cup Series the same weekend. Iowa being a standalone event for the where the Xfinity Series was the headliner. Cup guys stayed home. They're getting prepared to go out to Sonoma this coming weekend and do the first road course of the year. So Hornish got the call, had an excellent car, was able to smoke the field, took all the points because he didn't claim a series to compete for the championship in. So if he staked his claim as a Sprint Cup Series driver, he would be ineligible for any points. Ty Dillon came home second. Brad Keselowski took third. And of course, Brad, I guess not wanting to stay home, went out to Newton to compete in the race. So he was driving the 22 car for Penske. Of course, back in the day, once the Hornish drove in the Xfinity Series for Penske, it would either be Brad Keselowski in the 22 or Joey Logano in the 22. It always seemed like whenever they were in that car, it seemed to do a lot better. Hornish was consistent, but didn't seem like the car was good enough. But Keselowski, being a Cup driver, did not get any points for third. So the next point getter was regular Daniel Suarez, who won a couple weeks, get one last week. Then Alex Bowman in the fifth spot. Sixth, Elliot Sadler. Justin Allgaier, the little Gator, seventh. Brendan Poole is eighth in the 48 car. Ninth, Darrell Wallace Jr. 10th, Ben Kennedy. Cautions for 33 laps. 10 lead changes amongst four drivers. Sam Hornish, the win for Hornish was his fourth Xfinity Series victory. And then only one failed to qualify, Claire Decker, an independent in the 77. 2 hours, 7 minutes, 51 seconds. Average speed, 102.659 miles an hour. Margin of victory, 1.443 seconds. So almost a second and a half, which is a pretty big gap. Figure for every tenth, it's a car length. So that ought to tell you it was almost 20 car lengths. But Hornish, I'd like to see him back in the series, or at least something. He almost won the inaugural Xfinity race at the Brickyard. Of course, his teammate Brad Keselowski took it. But Hornish, who has won the Indianapolis 500, two IndyCar championships, it would have been nice to see him in that year get the Xfinity Series championship. Of course, after he won his IndyCar championship, he went over to run in the Sprint Cup Series with Roger Penske. And they weren't really that competitive because I guess they could, you know, Penske run the fielding two top level teams that year. Hornish being new to NASCAR, had to learn the nuances of the sport. So that being said, he did make the return this year, and it's nice to come back for if they're sitting out for a while and take the win. And here's Sam talking about it after the race.
Continuing our post-race media availabilities for the 6th Annual American Ethanol E15-250. We're joined now by Steve D'Souza, the Vice President of Competition for Extending Series for Joe Gibbs Racing, and our race-winning crew chief, Chris Gale. Gentlemen, congratulations on a very impressive performance today. Chris, I was just talking to Steve. I think this is the third different driver that you've had win in the 18 this year. What's the secret to getting that car ready with three guys with three different styles and maintaining that high level of performance?
They're just all really talented drivers. And, I mean, obviously a good car, right? It doesn't matter how good of a driver you are.
I didn't want to hear the crew chief anyway. So the way they have it listed, usually it's the driver first, the crew chief second, and the car owner or executive third. Didn't think Joe Gibbs was out there, so they sent a vice president of development for the team. But anyway, as we look to this coming week, done with the ovals, we head out to the road, out in wine country in Sonoma Raceway. 110-lap event. The road course regulars will be out there, and a lot of the people go there. It's usually the same cast of characters and drivers that usually finish. Of course, this race last year, the top two were the Busch brothers, Kyle and Kurt. It was one of Kyle's three in a row to help get him in the chase, and then eventually the Sprint Cup Championship. Kurt not too far behind. Clint Bowyer had a good run at this one last year. So did Kevin Harvick. And just looking at the list, in the number 9 car for Richard Petty Motorsports was Sam Hornish Jr., finishing in 10th spot. So who knows, maybe they'll tab him to drive this coming week. Of course, Joe Gibbs Racing will have the regulars in the car. He'll have Kyle Busch and his, Matt Kenseth and his, Denny Hamlin and his, and, of course, Carl Edwards in the 19. So who am I looking to win this year? Of course, last year's dominating drivers were Jimmy Johnson with 45 laps led and Kurt Busch with 43 laps led. Kyle led 17, but out of those 17, one of them was the last one. So who am I going to go with for a pick this week? Interesting. I'm kind of at a loss. You figure Kyle Busch needs a win, but Kurt Busch runs better there. And, of course, Johnson led twice for 45 laps, of course. Johnson, I'm trying to see when Jimmy Johnson led. Kurt Busch led the first 22. Johnson led the last 30 of the last 35. Lap 36, Kyle took the lead for the final four laps. So, and then Kurt Busch led off and on. Kyle led middle way. Kurt led early. Allmendinger didn't lead any. Where did the Dinger start? Probably, yep. He started on the pole. Wound up two laps down. With them. Never able to shake that, but you can't count Allmendinger out. He'll be driving the 13, or in that case, he'll be driving the 47 this year, just like he did last year. So I still don't think the Dinger will win it. He's won there before, and I think there's a fill-in for other guys, but I think it's going to be one of the, I don't know, tough call. I'll narrow it down. I'm going to go with one of the Busch brothers, but this time it'll be Kurt. But that's my pick for the week. Hope you all enjoyed today's show. Tune in next Tuesday when we'll have a wrap-up of the event in Sonoma. I'll try to book a guest or so. And we'll see what happens there. Everybody, have a good day, good racing, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks to Eric Enders for joining us. So I hope she does well in Norwalk. Bye now.